All right, everyone, welcome to episode 27 of the Porchcast. We actually got our episodes figured out and straightened out before the show started.
Look at us
putting on our big boy pants.
Goes a long way, yeah.
We are really stoked to be here at Mockery Brewing. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Zach is one of the co-founders here, has joined us for the show. But we're also excited to welcome on another co-host, Hunter Grondin.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome, Hunter, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
I'm stoked. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Reminds me of my glory days.
we'll be getting into our regular discussions with everyone here soon. But before we jump into it all, I want to be sure to plug our fantastic sponsors, First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. They are a pour-your-own draft system taproom and kitchen located at 1309 26th Street, right on Larimer, right off of Larimer in Denver, Colorado. Go in, you can actually pour your own drafts, pour your own beers, and it measures out each ounce. So you can actually try little samples of everything, or you can actually do full pours depending on what you want to try. They have tons of taps available. It's like going to your own beer festival. We like to say it's adult froyo because you can pour your own beer. But First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen at 1309 26th Street, right off Larimer Street here in Denver, Colorado. All right, let's jump right into it. It has been pretty long time since we last recorded our last podcast.
22 months, huh?
Yeah.
But that darn GABF tends to...
GABF really takes the wind out of you.
Everything,
that's
yeah.
Right. Lots of news to get to, but before we do, let's jump right into it with Zach Raven here over at Mockery. Zach, you guys are coming up on your second anniversary. Congratulations.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been... It's been a quick 2 years, but yeah, we've had fun the whole time, you know, making the beers we want to make and not really reproducing anything more than once for the most part. So, you know, every week around here looks different and something new, but yeah, it's been a ton of fun.
Let's start at the beginning, Mockery. I know that you all kind of got the name to kind of pay homage and also kind of throw a little shade at the old German purity laws. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's maybe one of the best ways of saying it. You know, it's hard to argue with the longevity and consistency of German beers and the Rheinheitsgebot's impact on those. But yeah, we absolutely respect the hell out of anybody making those kind of beers, but it wasn't our cup of tea. So we came into this, both Justin, our head brewer, and myself, having brewed other places and made other people's beer over and over repeatedly, and it got to be kind of monotonous. So we really set out to make the beers that we wanted to drink and really push the envelope and explore all the different flavors that are available to craft beer, which the American craft beer movement has done so awesome at really exploring all of those different flavors and styles and
absolutely.
Techniques. So, yeah, while we absolutely respect anybody that's doing it, we really wanted to constantly change things up and mess around with different ingredients, different techniques, different styles, and really not worry about any of our beers fitting into a framework such as the Rheinheitsgebot.
Absolutely, and you know, I think ingredients is kind of the key there. You all really do push the boundaries and try lots of different stuff. Looking at your all's tap list for the anniversary party, you see a sour brown with cherries and cacao nibs, see a mango session, see a pineapple IPA with peach, pink peppercorn, lots of different stuff going on there. Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, what influences some of these out-of-the-box beers and what you all have planned for this weekend as a whole?
Yeah, especially with this weekend, we like to really flex our muscles and show off that wide breadth of availability we have in flavors. But for the most part, we pull inspiration from anywhere we can possibly think to pull inspiration from. A lot of it comes from the cooking world, you know, whether it's a restaurant in town that just is making a killer dish and doing something new and exciting to, you know, our friends over at Butcher's Bistro inspiring us to try a bone beer, which in the end ended up not working, but, you know, we probably have a higher dump rate than most of the industry because of our tendency to kind of push the envelope, but
now that Bone beer, was it inspired by Ken Bone? Was it a Ken Bone beer?
No, it was Andrew over at Butcher's Bistro.
Red Sweater Bone IPA.
You know, seeing an opportunity, we had been sending them a bunch of our salted scotch, and he thought the flavors would marry well with a lot of their bone broths they do over there for a lot of their different plates.
That seems to be kind of the trend in the culinary world, a lot of the bone broth. I know that that's been happening for a while, but from a mainstream standpoint, really starting to take popularity. How do you kind of marry those flavors? I know that you said that beer didn't end up working out, but I guess what was the intent or the goal with...
It was the same intent and goal as a lot of our beers. It was, let's see if we can do this. Let's see if we can pull this off. But, yeah, it was an exploration of a new idea and new flavor. On a flavor basis, we got the beer tasting actually pretty solid. I mean, we really enjoyed it, but... couldn't work our way around the fat and collagen that came along with it and made for one chunky, unappetizing looking beer. So didn't meet our quality standards for serving, but that's kind of the territory we walk in. We know that most of these experiments, you know, the further and further we get out from the norm, the riskier and riskier all these experiments are, but it doesn't stop us from at the very least trying something. So you know, we'll try everything on a small scale, and stuff that works on that level gets moved up. But we learn stuff with every batch of beer we do, whether it makes it to the tap or not. It's an awesome experiment and learning process for us, so we have fun with the beers that never make it to the taps and we have to dump, as much as we do, you know, the beers we're most proud of and send off to competitions and serve at festivals and things like that.
That's commendable, man. Like, you just said the word dump like two or three times, and we definitely have dumped tanks up at Cold Arms, and any brewery that says they haven't dumped a tank has probably put bad beer on tap at some point, you know?
Absolutely.
So for you guys to be so experimental and to acknowledge the fact that, you know what, every once in a while these don't work out and we're going to put them down the drain, I don't even know if like the consumer realizes how much you're risking there, because you're risking dollars every time you're tying up a tank for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So
absolutely,
it's pretty radical to acknowledge that and know when to put a beer down.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously none of us are in this to make any money, so right. We really enjoy the experimentation side of it, and you know, we learn more from our dumps than we do from our successful batches. So we're becoming better and better brewers by the day, and are, you know, always looking for something different, you know, something that nobody else has done. Whether those are good ideas or bad come out in the end. But
I think looking at your lineup, and any given day, you're doing 10 beers that no one else has ever done. I mean, it's extraordinarily diverse, your lineup. Do you have any number of how many beers you've done in your first 2 years?
I've lost count. I think it's coming up on around 100. We really don't have any flagship beers. The closest we come is our salted scotch, but that's on tap about 70% of the time.
Okay.
Almost everything we do is a one and done. Again, that comes from our being brewers at other locations and kind of getting tired of brewing the same beers over and over. You know, it works for us and against us. We have a lot of customers that are constantly falling in love with the beer, and as soon as it runs out, we have to go through the difficult process. You know, sorry, we don't have that anymore. Here's something that's close to it, and, you know, playing that game. But
Lemon zested pilsner.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Numerous times. That's one of my favorite pilsners I've ever had. Experimental or fun, like pilsner. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the lemon zest pilsner gets it a lot. The smoked lager, the chili Maibach. There's definitely a handful of kind of crowd favorites.
That was one of the first beers I had from you guys at the meat festival.
Oh yeah,
the meat pairing. Yeah,
yep.
The meat festival.
Tell us more about this meat festival.
What was it called? It's a lot of it was very poorly ran. From people from out of state, suckered some breweries in. We all did it in a beer. We were young and dumb.
Yep.
And but yeah, that was the first time I tried a mockery beer, and I was like, "This is hitting." And then we came.
Was it put on by Arby's? We have the meat.
It was Arby's. Yeah, they were launching some.
You should have known by the
new products,
by the meat festival that
lemon zested pilsner with the cheddar. What do you call it? Cheddar.
Some kind of cheddar dip sauce.
Cheddar dip sauce.
Yeah.
And that was Kaiser Jose. You know who that was?
The lemon zest. I don't even know if we half the beers. If we've got a good, clever name to it, we'll name them. Otherwise, they go up as this style.
Arby's might come to you with a meat beer.
Yeah. Or also with the amount of dumps that we dropped in this first segment, I think dumps like a truck might have to be in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get you guys more sponsors.
I try to get Cisco out here for your next release party.
Well, just the fact that you can nail, in my opinion, like, all the beers I've had from you every time I've been here have been really, really delicious. And, you know, when we do our one-off kegs and we put spicing in there, we do titration, you know, and I'm, like, trying to figure out these certain amounts. For you to go full batch each time and to, like, take that risk again, so, like, it really speaks volumes. And, like, I don't know if sometimes a consumer even understands how much risk you're taking. You make Dogfish Head look like they're a... kind of an IPA company sometimes, you know? So it's pretty cool what you're doing down here.
And like I said, I mean, we do that as much for ourselves as we do for our customers. We have a ton of fun playing around with all that stuff and trying new things. So, you know, we treat our brew house like our playground and have a ton of fun doing it. So, you know, we really are open to any of our staff's ideas or customers' ideas, any inspiration we get from any breweries in and around our neighborhood. I mean, we really try and pull inspiration in from everywhere, but at the end of the day, we have a ton of fun brewing it and hope that that comes across in serving it. But yeah, the whole process in itself is just super fun for us.
So now 2 years in, tell me about what you've learned over the past 2 years. What has kind of been the biggest surprise to you? And also, afterwards, let's touch a little bit more on the actual event itself, the anniversary party. But back to a retrospective of the past 2 years. Let's take a look at that.
Yeah. Actually, Hunter made a good mention of us being young and dumb and signing up for everything. I think the one thing I've learned personally is how to say no. Carl in Denver especially is... gluttonous with a wealth of beer opportunities and festivals and everything else, and we've said yes to everything that's come our way for pretty much the past 2 years. And having gone through and done as much as we could, we really have a good grasp now on where our efforts and attentions need to be. The Car Brewers Guild and Two Parts, and there's a lot of good organizations that spend a lot of time putting on really quality events. And now that we can separate those from the events that are run by out-of-state for-profit companies,
yep,
that really just aren't where our hearts are, we're more ready and easy to identify those and say no to those and move on.
Sure.
That's been a rough learning curve, but at the same time, putting our beer in front of people's faces is never a bad thing for us. But we'll definitely become a little bit more discernible and picky in the opportunities we choose to go after. But
well, on the inverse of that too, I feel like you know, we recently served on a panel discussion together, and you touched on during that panel discussion, you touched on kind of some of the work that you all have been able to do in the community over the past 2 years. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, that came out of basically the same idea that whether it was a charity, a festival, a company, a private party, whatever it was, we've said yes to it, almost everything that's come our way, both for better and for worse. Working with some charities and organizations has been great for us. Others has really, I mean, we're never looking for a bump in our profits or our margins or anything like that, but every opportunity has different advantages and disadvantages, but we found a handful of groups that we really enjoy working with, and we see the benefit of their work in the community, so we really enjoy targeting those types of groups where we can see the impact that we're contributing to, and especially when it's local, the people that it's impacting. So our hearts are definitely there, and any opportunity we can get to use our beer for the good of the community is, you know, our best hope.
Sure. Now, back to this event on Saturday. This coming Saturday, we're going to release this podcast before the weekend hits, so everybody will hopefully get to preview this event and come out and join us from 12 to 11 p.m. this Saturday, November 5th at Mockery. What are you most excited to showcase? I see some really interesting beers on this list. I see a dry Irish potato stout. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, a lot of our beers, I end up hating that the potato stout absolutely being one. It has nothing to do with how it would be experienced out of the glass. It's the process of making it. That one, yeah, it was, I can't even remember the number. I think it was like 1,200 pounds of potatoes.
Holy cow. How do you process it?
Yeah. We actually invited our customers to come in,
come
peel 10 potatoes, you get a beer.
Awesome.
Yeah, we recruited help for that one. But
beer's cash.
Even then, yeah, it was a lot of potato peeling. Then cut them all into cubes, threw them in, boiled them for a couple hours in mesh sacks. Then I had the distinct honor of climbing in the kettle and hoisting them back out. And at that point, they were essentially mashed potatoes, threw them into the mash tun with the rest of the grain and mashed from there. It was a fun experiment, like the rest of our stuff. The incredibly labor intensive beers
sure,
tend
yeah.
to be some of the beers that I hate in the end.
And then also, you all have a tremendous barrel aging program that's kind of begun flourishing over the past year and a half or so. Party of the Moon Tower is definitely one that we've already showcased on the website. Brandy barrel aged Mo Honey, Scotch barrel aged Porter, Generation Boomerang. I mean, this is a pretty formidable list right here.
Yeah, and we treat our barrel program like the rest of our brewing program, in that if we can push the envelope or test out a new flavor or style, we absolutely do that. Both the Generation Boomerang and Mo Honey were good examples of that. The Mo Honey last year was our collaboration with Saucony Creek out of Pennsylvania. It was a pear braggot.
Cool.
So we've had a fun time, one, just brewing a braggot, it being a lesser known, lesser brewed style, more or less the meeting of mead and ale. So we use 550 pounds of local Colorado wildflower and orange blossom honey, and a whole bunch of pear puree to make that one, and then it sat in brandy barrels for about 6 months. And the Generation Boomerang was a Belgian quad aged on California dates that sat in wine barrels for 2 years.
Holy moly.
With some Brett and other things going on. We're really excited about that one. The time alone for us has been an anxious waiting game, because we have really loved it the whole time, but the aging process has really helped develop some of the deeper complex flavors. So we're really excited about that one. We'll be doing a bottle release of both the Mo Honey Mo Problems and the Generation Boomerang at the anniversary party.
I want to excuse my ignorance and my interruption here, but Party at the Moon Tower, that huge Taste Confused fan.
Yeah.
What is that beer?
Party of the Moon Tower is our bourbon barrel-aged vanilla porter.
Okay.
One of the very few recipes that has survived all the way back to my homebrewing days. I made a lot of hot garbage in my homebrewing days, and a very few recipes survived from that time. But yeah, the vanilla porter was definitely one of them. And then we've gotten the opportunity to work with Breckenridge Distilling and get a lot of their barrels. So
cool.
They give us some awesome barrels. So yeah, that was a no-brainer for us, and ended up being tasty. Again, another little bit labor-intensive one, peeling or cutting and prepping hundreds of vanilla beans.
I feel like you do this to yourself a
lot. It's part of the experimentation process. Most things on paper look like a good idea, and you get into execution. And
you guys should probably just change your name to Masochist Brewing.
Right, yeah. That's absolutely.
Well, we want to jump into a little bit of beer news, and before we do, we want to urge everyone to come out this Saturday, November 5th, to Mockery Brewing. Celebrate the second anniversary. Lots of tremendous beers up on the lineup, and also just celebrate, you know, the tremendous work that you all have done over the past 2 years. It's really exciting. You know, I've been a fan since the very early days, and it's so great to see that you all are still doing tremendous stuff.
And like I said, this is so much fun for us that every day we can come in and do our thing. It's a pleasure for us. So. The fact that we've made it 2 years is great, and just to be part of the community is a pleasure for us, but every day we get to do it is one more day that we get to have fun.
Totally. I feel like one thing we can all say at this table is that breweries really are like second homes.
Oh yeah.
It's like you leave home and you go to your second home and you bond and you like just really get to be yourself and hang out. I just want to say cheers to all of us, but especially Mockery.
Yeah,
likewise.
Yeah, 2 years this weekend.
I appreciate
Is this location with you and Great Divide and Crooked Stave the closest three breweries in Denver? I mean, it's right up there.
Yeah,
it's really incredible to have.
Yeah, you could throw in Blue Moon about 100 yards away as well.
Didn't even think of it.
I could throw a football.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of my absolute favorite parts about this community. We probably have 10 breweries within a mile of us, and just being a part of the community is absolutely one of my favorite parts. You know, we bend over backwards to help and collaborate and contribute with any other brewery that we work with, but they do the same thing for us, and while being ultra competitive with everyone else, you know, we absolutely view it as rising tide raises all boats, and we're all fighting the same battle and having a hell of a time doing it. So just, you know, they work hard for us as well as we do for them. So proximity is really an attribute that helps us rather than hurts us.
I agree, man. Speaking of the community and the battle, there's a lot going on out there.
Going on in the news, and I want to jump into that. But before we do, just a reminder, First Draft Taproom and Kitchen is our sponsor for this show. They're located at 1309 26th Street, so 26th and Larimer. Fantastic sponsors. Once again, go out and check out their Pour Your Own Draft system. Measures all your beer, pours by the ounce. You can actually pour it yourself. Sample a little of everything. They've got tons of different beers on, different styles, different kinds of breweries from both here locally and also nationally as well. So go in and check out First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. It's a pour your own draft system, kind of like the adult version of a Froyo stand. All right, let's get into the news. First of all, we'd be remiss to skip over GABF. We all experienced it. We all kind of went through the week of hell, and then we've managed to come out alive.
It's like a happy hell.
It's like a happy hell.
Touch me in the bikini area.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
We're on the dial. That
bad touch.
Touch me.
Yeah. I want to run through the gamut. Tell me, let's do a quick fire around the table. Tell me your favorite and your lowest moment, I guess. Your favorite moment and your lowest moment from the week.
Come to me last.
I think my favorite was, I tend to try and pick a style of beer or a region of breweries to highlight because there's just too many options to go willy-nilly at it and try and remember anything. But Scratch Brewing was an absolute surprise to me. I had maybe heard of the name before JBF and got to try some of their beers and was blown away.
They went all mushroom this year.
Yeah, they had a handful of mushroom beers, which, you know, again, coming from pushing the envelope, I absolutely was excited by that. But their execution was absolutely awesome, and a lot of just flavors you don't see in beer usually. So that was a highlight for me. Low light was probably almost getting barfed on, but
but it's an almost.
But yeah. I guess the almost could be a highlight as well.
I feel like there's a story there. Tell me a little bit more.
It's just wrapping up a session, and last pour had been called and everything, and we had walked out from behind our pouring station for 30 seconds and almost got splashed.
Just
and
an attendee.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Pulled my matrix move and dodged it.
That yoga's been paying off, right?
Yeah, clearly. But could have been worse, but it goes with
the territory, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jesse, what about yourself?
Well, this year and next, I'm lucky that my birthday actually falls right in the middle of GABF.
Nice.
So, and being an avid, if not obsessive, compulsive fan of the movie Step Brothers, we had our Catalina wine mixer called Irons, which I'm convinced now, like in hindsight, the only reason we opened a brewery was just name every beer after a Step Brothers quo and every event after a Step Brothers event. So that was super cool. My mom came through and had a lot of like friends and family come through and get to experience that at the brewery, and everything was really neat about that. Least favorite, I think, honestly, like not being able to attend a lot of the cool ass events going on. Mm-hmm. Like I think Ratio, True, and Burial, and someone else,
Revolution.
All did an event at the High Dive, and I really, really wanted to attend that, but there's just simply no way, at least at this point, in terms of our staffing, that I can make these fun events. And I want to do karaoke, but you Ratio guys, you go like way later in the night than us. man up at Call to Arms or something.
Absolutely.
Like that. So,
no. Tristan puts me to shame personally, but no kidding. He tried to like bail out of two events the other night. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm going to both of these events and you're not. He's like, I can't do it, man. I'm like, bullshit. This dude went to UMS all day, went to Red Rocks, and then went back to UMS. I went to UMS insane. From 7 to 11 and then went to bed. And then like found out the next day that this dude went like 15 hours straight of music nonstop.
Yeah, I texted Hunter to try to meet me at UMS, and he was like an incoherent blur.
No, it was a blur. But this dude goes 15 hours nonstop. And so if he ever tells you no, if he ever tells you you can't do something, he's straight up lying. His only excuse is he's with his girl. And that's it.
That makes sense.
We're also doing stuff. So
if you want to sleep, just say you're hanging out with Brittany.
What about you, Hunter? What are your
highs and lows? I actually got a second you on the fact. I'll start with my low. My low would be, we did a lot of events during GABF. At one point, I looked over at Tristan and I was like, dude. It's like, New Belgium is doing like the same amount of events as us around Denver. And he was like, I started to complain. I was like, how are they doing a few more? He's like, well, we're like a little brewery. And I was like, well, they're only doing two or three more. So I got a little nervous. This was like the week or two before. I was like, my life's going to suck. Yeah, I was like, holy shit, I got to bounce around all over the place. But the low, though, coming off of that is that I didn't get to attend, you know, the Catalina wine mixer and go to a lot of cool events that were going on around GABF. In fact, Thursday night after GABF, I was so wiped out that I just went home. I didn't even bother to think about anything that anyone was doing. So that was definitely my low. The high, I gotta say, though, was I'm gonna be a little selfish here, was that High Dive event.
Yeah.
That was awesome. It was a fun event with a really great twist to it. And it goes back to community with the beer, because when Kat from True originally reached out to us, she wanted to incorporate something else than just like a tap takeover and just, you know, come here because these breweries are here. But the main focus was for Keep a Breast Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization for breast cancer awareness. And that was the main focus of the whole night, was all, you know, we raised over $2,300 just at the door.
Great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For the event, which was great. And then again, you know, we brought the beer, you know, came together, the brews came together and put on a show. There was probably like, I don't know, 10 people from each brewery there having a great time. Awesome. So that was a cool event.
And good turnout.
But yeah, that goes back to just awesome breweries having a good time and then focusing on another cause. And I'd like to see GABF do more of that personally. I was pretty proud to know that I was able to help out, or Ratio was able to help out and do something like that, but during GABF. I think a lot of people could do events like that, especially when you've got 50,000 people coming from out of town to be here in Denver.
Absolutely.
So you got added support for doing some really neat local events.
Yeah. For me, I think it was probably low, similar to you all, the GABF FOMO, you know. This was my first year running events, not just, and running events and coordinating things, not just for porch drinking, but also for ratio, so that's like double time that week. And so definitely was a little bit pulled in several different directions, but ended up really trying to focus in on a lot of our ratio stuff, which was great. So it was really cool to see events like our karaoke party just be packed to the brim, and that was a blast to see a bunch of brewers just drunkenly singing
right.
the most embarrassing songs.
Talented, though.
Yeah.
Like, talented. It was not like sloppy. Yeah. It was like, I'm not singing.
Oh, yeah.
I will ruin this party. Yeah.
But also, it was really great to, I guess my highs are a combination of things, but the discovery of several breweries who are doing some really tremendous stuff. I think the two standouts for me were Modern Times mm-hmm. And also Beechwood Barbecue, which, you know, yeah. both of those breweries have been kind of established and have been around for a couple of years now, but to see them really hitting their stride with their sour programs and their barrel aging program, really, really impressive stuff. And then also on the event side of things, I was fortunate enough to attend What the Funk again this year, and that event, let me tell you, there were so many people, and I wrote a post about this, and I was a little bit more politically correct in the post, but I want to say that everyone who was bitching about last year's event and didn't attend this year's event was literally losing their mind, and you know, they're a bunch of idiots, and they're a huge part of what's wrong with this industry, is this mm-hmm. mentality of kind of ganging up against something that maybe didn't work the first time around, but then you don't give them the second chance, and that's the biggest mistake. I mean, if you attended What the Funk this year, you were drinking Cantillon at the end of the night. They had hourly releases throughout the event. You were drinking Pulling Nails or Rusty Nails, sorry, from Fremont Brewing. That was my last pour of the evening. You had. Ale Song, which is this tremendous new brewery that has developed a really great Brett program. You have, you know, the classic heavy hitters like Allagash and now Powder Keg up in Niwot, and you also have Black Project that's debuting their fantastic stuff. So, you know, Bell's coming out here, and you know, heavy hitters from throughout the industry that you can't normally find in this area, bringing their very best, and it was just a tremendous showcase. So, you know, props to the Crooked Stave crew. They identified the problem areas from the mm-hmm. previous year and came out and just threw a masterful event this year.
Yeah, I'm changing my low light to not being able to participate in those events, like you said. Like, that's one of the best parts about GABF is all the ancillary events that go on, and like you said, Tristan, all the exceptional beer that these heavy hitters really do showcase and bring out their most special reserve and private label
stuff.
We're lucky
to live here, have GABF here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's jump into some other news. You know, Todd Hogg, Surly. Have you guys all heard that story?
Yeah,
I've heard about it.
Head brewer over at Surly has kind of just announced that he'd be departing, and then just a few days later, actually just yesterday, we just found out that he's going to be joining the Three Floyds team in Chicago, well, outside of the Chicago area in Munster, Indiana. So, Hunter, I know that you have a lot to say about
this. I'm bummed. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Todd the Axeman.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I was a little bummed because, to me personally, I felt that the way that they marketed Todd was he was a founder of that brewery, mm-hmm. and I don't want to bash on Surly. I don't know the owner, so I don't want to like hate on him too much. But I really feel like he was a foundation of that brewery that they let go too easily.
Yeah, for those who didn't read the Minneapolis magazine or Minneapolis St. Paul magazine, actually broke the story of an interview with Todd Hogg Like you, I thought he was a part owner in the company.
Yeah, I mean,
do we really know how easily he was let go? I mean, no, for example, at Avery.
Well, I mean, he wasn't let go.
Operation Steve Breezley. Okay,
they would let him go without.
But we don't know what's
brewery.
Going on these major multi-million-dollar companies.
Absolutely.
Right?
Sure.
So like Steve Breezley isn't at Avery anymore. And there may be a lot of reasons for that. There's no articles written about that,
right.
But Steve Breezley very much so was like the man behind all the production going on there. So is it so much that more he's an icon and that's what you view him as, or
yeah.
if he's actually that pivotal?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's been marketed, he's almost, if you go to their About Us website, as the head brewer and has been since they started.
Yeah, he's been
and
the
they've
face.
Marketed him even behind beers atop the X-Man, which mm-hmm. I personally think is one of the best IPAs I've had.
And I think the main points that they brought up in the interview with Todd was that he had no ownership stake, no employee stock, and no other financial incentive.
And
for
I would venture to say that almost the majority of big breweries of their size, the head brewer probably doesn't have any of those mm-hmm. things.
Interesting.
Yeah, good point.
Of that size.
Yeah,
which has gotten to be pretty big. I mean, you don't see much of their beer outside of Minnesota at this point. Still.
A lot of times, head brewer is just a figurehead, you
right.
know, and the people on the floor are the ones actually making the beer.
Right.
And then there's a discrepancy and a difference between that individual and the owners. And it's very hard, I think, sometimes for owners to give out shares. And sometimes they don't even have it broken down so they can give out shares.
Which is interesting, especially, but you have someone like that has built success within your brewery, and then you leave and build a $35 million facility
right.
without giving any sort of like thank you for brewing these amazing beers.
Right,
like,
you got us to
you.
That point.
Let's market you, making mm-hmm. people believe that you were a founder mm-hmm. of this company and you were here from the get-go. It's just kind of a bummer that
totally.
You know, that can happen. You know,
there's just a whole lot of conversation over not a whole lot of information.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could see that too. But it makes you wonder.
Sure.
How a company could grow to that large.
Having worked at one, it doesn't make me wonder that much.
But it doesn't.
Not really.
It doesn't make you.
But here's the thing, though. I want to be the devil's advocate in this situation, because if you have someone who is so instrumental in developing the core beers that have become iconic for your company, you know what? At what point are you to say, like, all right, there's no way we can restructure. There's no way we can try to figure this out, because, you know, craft beer has been founded on this kind of idyllic, kind of fairyland, kind of idealism, and we're seeing a lot of growing pains nowadays. But
I'm not defending what they did.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's very in line with what I've seen.
For sure, and that's true. And that's true. But I think it's potentially,
because it is an idyllic thing, and I think a lot of times people forget that it's business sometimes.
It
and
is.
You know, sometimes these people who are figureheads, I didn't even know who this guy was, to be honest with you. I'm sorry. I like Surly, I respect Surly,
sure.
but I'm not like up to speed on a lot of the higher ups at these regional breweries. I'm much more in line with like the smaller breweries and the folks I talk to on a day-to-day basis. But I don't know. I feel like it's become more of a story than it should be, because I think this is kind of the norm at the bigger companies, mm-hmm. personally.
Well, I think
it's interesting.
I think a lot of, like you said, the fact that it is a business now is really starting to shine through, and we're experiencing some of those business savvy moves that, you know, maybe the industry fans aren't as used to, and maybe that's, you know, you see the massive layoffs at Stone as a classic example of that. At what point is that backlash going to be detrimental to the industry?
It's a romantic industry. When you're selling a guy as a figurehead,
mm-hmm.
There's a romance built around him. And when you have to sever that tie, there's a almost breaking up process where there could be backlash, and
sure.
that I liked your brand because of this guy. And if that guy's not there, I might not want to be associated with your brand anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
It's tough. It really is tough.
No, it is tough, because I wonder if Surly's gotten so big that most of Surly's following doesn't know who Todd
Absolutely.
Is.
Yeah.
And they, Todd the Axeman, that could be some metal
right,
player, guitarist that they just think they're drinking a beer named after him. But they
yeah.
couldn't care. They could care less, because the beer's amazing.
Like, people know Dan Carey from New Glarus. Does anyone know their head brewer's name?
Nope.
You know?
Yeah.
But yet they're like a revered brewery. Like, there's a lot of like back and forth between who's important at what brewery and what beers are important
sure.
within which brewery's portfolio.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, kind of even more kind of an iconic name, Dick Yuengling hit the headlines recently, coming out saying that our guys are with you in support of Trump. You know, my question, I'm not going to go on either side of this from a political standpoint, but I guess from a partisan standpoint, but what I guess my bigger question to you all is it right for a brewery to jump into politics and openly endorse a candidate either way?
I don't think it's right or wrong. I think it's ill-advised. I don't see any benefit in it. There's going to be backlash one way or another. And you're taking an awful big risk in associating yourself with something like a political candidate. For me, myself, and our brewery, it's like choosing between a douche and a turd sandwich. So, we really don't care one way or another. It's kind of a...
And if you look at his track record, he's clearly been a waiver, like a union buster. He's clearly been leaning right for quite a while.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when this whole goddamn charade mockery of an election's over, I bet you those tap handles that they lost, they'll probably be back on within like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And people will forget about it for another 2.5 years for the next fucking bullshit fake election takes place.
From our point of view, we're in this for beer. Trying to fold that into another world such as politics is...
So do you
the whole rat trap that I don't want to get into?
Jesse, you said that you think that those customers that they might have lost, you think they'll make it up in sales eventually. You don't think it's going to be that big of a hit?
I just feel like Yuengling's a big enough company. I believe this guy's a billionaire.
Yeah.
So even if he lost, I believe like the senator, the representative came out and named 13 places by name to take him off tap. And he might have lost some of those handles, but that company is not going to fail because of that.
Oh, certainly.
It sounds
certainly
like this guy's been on that train for a while, and the people that work for him and the accounts that buy from them have probably known this for a while, and this is just being brought to the forefront because Donald Trump is such a dramatic, big, amazing, polarizing figure right now.
But, yeah. We'll talk about kind of transitioning to other polarizing figures. There's no other story, and I've said this privately, but I really do mean this. There's no other story that matters in craft beer as much as what Anheuser-Busch is doing in the industry right now. If you could try to mask it any way you want, you could try to cover it up with any sort of fairy tale or any sort of glaze of saying, the little guys are going to win. Little guys are still doing their own thing. But in the end, craft beer is kind of the anti-hero versus the hero to the anti-hero that is Anheuser-Busch. AB making lots of noise recently, most recently purchasing Northern Brewer and Midwest Supplies, a homebrewing giant. And also it was just announced that AB's Bud Light sales have dropped by about 2%, losing a 0.65 market share. They just cut the Amy Schumer and Seth Rogen campaign in response to that, and instead are putting all their chips in Lady Gaga's...
I want to see these dive bars she's going
dive
to.
Bar
dive
bars.
Is she a bar? I guarantee she's not at bar.
Yeah.
Let's consider it.
What is the bar down the street? Phil's Bar?
Phil's, but that was actually kind of nice, too.
Is it? Yeah.
I'd like to see her in that.
I guess Bar Bar would be the most...
Bring the blood on the table.
Or for those old school Denverites, Star Bar... not Star Bar, but... What's the hotel bar that used to be?
Rock Bar.
Yeah.
Rock Bar.
That would be like the prime real estate for a Lady Gaga Bud Light tour. But also, Anheuser-Busch's CEO Carlos Brito recently was quoted as saying, "Consumers get a bit tired of choice. There's only so much shelf space that you can share and cold box that you can split." Now, I think the second statement is absolutely true, but consumers get a bit tired of choice. What are your thoughts on that? coming from someone who offers the gamut of choices, Zach, what are your thoughts?
I can't relate to that, but I think a lot of efficacy and potency gets washed out in a multitude of choice, because everyone has a story to tell and everyone has a brand to sell. But a lack of choice is way more threatening to me than a
absolutely
abundance of choice.
I don't even know what that means.
I
feel like their main competitors, if they're even in competitors anymore, I don't know. Like their main, you go to like Hazel's or Molly's, right? Mm. And you got all these cooler spaces full of craft beer, or what was or is craft beer. And then you got a whole other same mm-hmm. width of space with just Bud Miller Coors, imports, domestics, all that.
Yep.
So are they battling mostly against them? Are they battling against small? I don't even know if they're concerned about mixed six packs going on. I don't even know what that. I feel like he just like burped that out of his mouth.
He's just trying to. I feel like he's trying to remind their consumers, their followers, like don't go that like to the dark side.
I don't
side.
Feel like their consumers read these press releases. Like,
that's also a good point.
Anybody that is a diehard butt fan,
marketing to his employees to remember or remind them to market to their consumers and their sales reps. Like this is your job, and that's to keep these people away from craft beer.
Yeah,
and keep people away from choice. To keep people away from choice.
While they're opening,
yeah, say Bud Light. Like, why do you need another beer besides Bud Light? While they're opening up other craft breweries,
what do you think, Tristan?
I think, like you said, the threat of shelf space is where this battle gets seen.
Yeah,
I believe shelf space is the only front where that's really a true statement. You know, it's interesting to me. In a lot of ways, I think that AB's approach toward craft beer, aside from Goose Island, I'll say that what they've done with Goose Island should have been the standard bearer of how they should have approached all of their other breweries, but it hasn't been that way. And you see with Golden Road, Tim Barrel, most specifically here in Denver. I could go on about how for days about how this Tim Barrel decision was probably one of the most tone-deaf decisions that they could have possibly made here in Denver. And I probably will in a post soon. but to me, it seems like, I've spoken with Meg Gill and Todd Ussery and the Tim Barrel crew, and they talked about how there was a disconnect between big beer, the big beer division, and the high-end brand craft beer division of Anheuser-Busch, but it seems to me there still is a disconnect. It hasn't really resonated yet that they have found a way to identify those core values of what craft beer really means and what it and flip the switch to reflect that in their craft beer brands. Because aside from what they've done with Goose Island, it all seems like a huge game of chess to try to eliminate craft beer as a whole and just dominate the market with their brands.
Devil's Backbone, is that AB?
That is, yeah.
That's one that I was disappointed in. You know, I really love their beer. And I don't really, I haven't spent much time in Virginia or down that neck of the woods, but I don't know. But at the same time, like,
it didn't feel like a Golden Road that was almost seemed built to sell.
As did Breckenridge.
Well, same with Four Peaks. I mean, like, when are you ever, when you think of ABI's high-end brand division, do you ever immediately think of, oh yeah, Four Peaks is coming in, they're going to be a big name.
Right.
Devil's Backbone, they're going to be sweeping the nation soon. Like, what, like, really?
Right.
Why would you sign, and why would you go for these
I've never had a Devil's Backbone beer.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'd like to. Very I've heard stuff. Great things, but we'll, that out of all the breweries that have actually who have left or been sold, left the craft beer world and sold out to AB, most people I see on social media are like, saw that coming. Like, they almost like just throw them through shade right away. Devil's Backbone's the only brewery that I've seen where people are like, no! Like, yeah. I can't believe it. They were almost
this could
truly
go on.
Like, wow.
For like another hour with this comment, but like what blows me away a lot is the fact that no one talks about the PE acquisitions. No one talks about Duvel. Mm-hmm. No one talks about Omegang or Boulevard or Firestone Walker or Oscar Blues and the fact that Oscar Blues will probably be sold to one of the big guys and or some other firm in a while too. Like, it's so weird to me too. We always want to hate on, and yes, you're right, ABI and everything that's going on with these guys and all the mega mergers that are happening at the top that I can't even keep track on and what's happening. Those are big deals.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's talking about this PE stuff, and no one seems to care about this.
Wait, I do want to bring this up for a second, because I think that's the biggest misconception, is that what's wrong with PE and what's wrong?
They can ultimately just sell in 5 years. The PE guys just, at least from what I've read,
sell the inbound, very much so.
So yeah, so maybe Oscar Blues quote unquote bought Perrin. Oscar Blues quote unquote bought Cigar City. They didn't.
Right.
The PE company did. And, yeah.
No, it's
and
far more
so
dangerous.
That money's not. You know, Dale's
Brooklyn,
doing his things. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Right. So it's like, where is that going to go? That money has to get flipped somewhere. And like Omegang, which I'm very proud to have worked at one point in my life, you know, they were founded on a great wealth of money. And why is Firestone Walker still at the Great American Beer Festival? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that works. And everyone can be like, well, the percentage of shares and ownership and money and this, that, and we keep raising the BA's barrelage to keep Sam Adams underneath it. There's a lot of, like, tricks within our own craft beer trade that were...
Well, sure. For me, I think all of what you said is very valid, but I think that's the long game of the chess game that's happening here. And I think all of that stuff is a little bit too far ahead for us to predict how that will all shake out. From an immediate standpoint, from a tangible standpoint of what you can see right now, my issue with ABI is the aggressive tactics that they're. Mm-hmm. Aggressive business tactics that skirt legality on distribution, and also getting out there and dominating shelf space and all that stuff, you know, incentivizing and also owning distributorships. All of that is what is the beef that I have with ABI.
I think now, in somewhat of their agreement with this monopoly that they just formed, there was some governance over their distribution, right?
But it's got time frames on a lot of, even so, when
Oscar Blues moves into here at Toronto, right? Because they're opening a Chubburger.
Yep.
And Chris Black himself is his own issues the way the Oscar Blues has handled
just
that.
Just in case people don't know what you're talking about.
I think there are, regardless of ABI or whatever, I think these PEs are kind of somehow getting away with similar greedy tactics.
Yeah.
Well, I think the craft beer world has put ABI at this level where they are pure evil and they're what is wrong with the industry. So a lot of the PE acquisitions and everything kind of fall below the radar because it doesn't have the ABI name attached to it, but could equally be as destructive to our industry, if not more.
But on the inverse, too, you have to think that, you know, some element of the resources and being able to grow their footprint and all that comes into play, and maybe it is the other option.
They have the resources.
Yeah,
I'm just scared of the greed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Self-driving truck. I'm just gonna throw that out there just because we touched on ABI, but it makes so much sense that Uber and Anheuser-Busch would be behind this. You know, Uber probably is the only other corporate entity alongside Anheuser-Busch it just makes me shake my head every single time. but any quick thoughts on that?
It's a great way to take a nap and go on a road trip.
I use Lyft.
Just wait till Skynet becomes self-aware. We're all screwed.
I'm just waiting for the robots to show up.
The Ballast Point thing within the article that I did not realize that their top big four guys left. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that feels for the employees, because I've kind of been someone who justifies. Okay, sometimes maybe these owners have worked hard. They want to get money for a sale. Maybe these owners have health concerns. Maybe their family has money they need to. So maybe these companies should be bought for $1 billion. Maybe. But I wonder how it feels when not only is your company that you're a brewer for, you're a packaging guy for, you get bought, and then you're already under a big umbrella, but then the big four guys, go away. I wonder how that feels for those employees. It must be where is the structure left at that company? Are they just going to start throwing a bunch of Jolly Ranchers in every bottle of Sculpin?
I'm staying.
I don't know. What's left there? Is it the new Zima of what? Craft beer?
I mean, that's the thing, is like they have bills to pay, so yeah. You're kind of stuck in between a rock and a hard place.
You're absolutely right. It's the luxury of those four big guys have built a name and a reputation for themselves, so they have the availability to go out and market themselves, whereas your keg-washing cellarman doesn't have that ability, and they have to show up on Monday.
Right.
I can't imagine it's very endearing for the rest of those guys.
Yeah.
Well, let's end on a positive note. Let's go around the circle. We haven't done this in a while. Let's talk about one beer, just really quickly, one beer that you had this week that really blew your mind, or maybe even in between the last time that we recorded our podcast and now. I'd love to hear something that has really kind of gotten you to smile, because we've been talking a little bit of the negativity that's been happening in the industry, and I want to end on a happy note. So, Hunter, you said you've got yours.
Yeah, I got mine right away. Actually, I probably had like at least 12 or 13, 14 of these this week. Even went about a six pack, and it kind of goes back to the whole big beer bullshit. But born yesterday from Lagunitas, that fresh hot pale ale
really
was fucking money. Yeah. It was so good. Yeah. I found a secret keg at a bar by my house. And I say secret keg because it's not a craft beer bar that their sales rep frequents. Like,
is it El Camino?
It's El Camino. It's El Camino. I love that spot. Actually, I had lunch there today. Six tacos. And
the listeners who just don't understand.
Six tacos?
It's double tacos. They're
street tacos.
Hunter loves El Camino. And he will plug El Camino any chance that he
will. Go to El Camino, actually. Sam, I sent you there. Buy Ratio Beer. We got on Hold Steady Chocolate Red Scotch Ale on tap right now.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. To the point. So,
Hunter's moved on to full on tipping.
Fresh out of the pale ale, I thought it was fantastic. One of the best hoppier beers I've had. And I don't care who brewed it. It was awesome.
All right. Yeah. Jesse, what do you
got? The 2 6-packs I've been buying and or been getting from friends up at Avery. Old Jubilation in cans.
It's
so fucking fun to drink. I'm reminded now why me and a couple guys from Avery used to drink a 6-pack of that and like have this fun night where we'll see how drunk we would get on a 6-pack, and it gets you there real quick.
Yeah.
Hibernation has been tasting really awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's maybe better than I've ever had it before. It's like chocolatey, like brown.
I would say that's one of the best parts of being their neighbors. We get crowlers and all kinds of stuff coming our way, and
hibernation
is good.
That Hibernation and Old Jube from Avery, Hibernation from Great Divide, Old Jube from Avery, both of those fit in the category of those will get you sneaky drunk real quickly.
Right, but they're so fun.
And they're so
And honestly, my favorite beer of the year, or at least this season, is the Oktoberfest at Bierstadt. That is one of the best Oktoberfests I've ever had in my life. Nice. Fucking awesome.
Did you try Stegel? Just curious.
I haven't yet. Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Okay. Moving on.
I'm going to have to stay hyper-local, and the guys over at our mutual friend just came out with IPA, and I'm going to butcher the name. It's like Bangkok Phone Booth or something like that.
Nice.
But, man, it is.
They just took a dartboard and threw it through.
That's exactly what I said, is they've got a giant dartboard, and they're just throwing darts. But, really just super dank and hoppy, but
awesome.
Really, really good.
What kind of ABV?
6, 7, 8. Yeah, your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah.
I
had 8 of them.
I don't get to go out very much. Outside of that, I found some Schlinkerlaw in some stores, so some good old rock beer has been my treat lately.
Nice. For me, the one that I've been really just digging right now is the Lunix from Black Project. Okay. It's a coffee sour. I think it's with Corvus Coffee. And, you know, Crooked Stave over there with their Nightcap was the first coffee sour beer that I've ever tasted, and it blew my mind. And this Lunix is right up there. I'm really pumped. And yeah, I've got to agree with Hunter. That Steak Old from our haunt at Ratio was my favorite Oktoberfest from the season. But yeah, you mentioned Bierstadt. The slow pour pills is definitely one that.
So good.
Yeah, they've got a tap handle down the outside one of their cold storage rooms, and it's just pour yourself.
Yeah.
Pour yourself a slow pour. Yeah, I will.
Well, I wanted to be sure to say a big thanks to all of our, first of all, Zach, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Right,
and we want to make sure to remind everyone to come out this Saturday for Mockery's second anniversary. They're right here in the Rhino District. What's the cross streets?
35th and Delgany, but essentially 35th and Brighton Boulevard.
35th and Brighton, right across from Great Divides Barrel Bar. Be sure to come out for Mockery's second anniversary. This tap list is absolutely ridiculous, and
yeah, it should be fun. We're digging into a lot of our stuff we've been holding back, and a lot of our specialty releases. We're closing down the whole street, so we'll have a big block party, nice. Lots of live music.
Cool.
Raffling off a lot of really cool items from the neighborhood, and stuff like free beer for a year from us. So
wow.
It should
that's
be fun.
Amazing.
Awesome.
We'll be sure to pour the post the pour list in the post for this podcast. And also a big thank you to Jesse Brookstein and also Hunter Grondin for joining us as guest hosts for today's episode 27.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we want to be sure to remind everyone to follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever device you use to listen to this podcast. Be sure to follow us and follow Porch Drinking at Porch Drinking CO on Twitter. You can utilize that to chat with us and touch base before our next episode. Once again, big thanks to First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 1309 26th Street. Pour your own draft system. You can go in and try a little something of everything, or you go ahead and go in for a full pour of something that you already love. First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, our sponsor for today's show. My name's Tristan. This has been The Porchcast. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be sure to join you in a few weeks for our next episode with Marty Jones.
Ooh. Marty J. Oh.
Marty J.